Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
And away we go. It's Fantasy Sports Today right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. That is FNTSY, Dan Strafford and Mike Blewett along with you this morning, talking about all things sports for the next 3 hours. You'll hear from George Kurtz in hour number three on today's show. We will, of course, talk about that little football game happening on Sunday, but we'll also touch on some other topics from around the NFL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball, if we are so moved. But first and foremost, let's see how Mike's doing. Mike, you a little under the weather? What's going on in your camp?
It's not too bad, just a little bit of a sniffle, but it's probably more due to a lack of sleep than anything else, as you and I were talking about before. The little kids can wake you up earlier than you would like. So I'm ready to go. I said to Sean Engel, our producer, before we got on air, I think I'm almost talked out on the Super Bowl.
Yep.
But I do have six more hours to go. So these three, and then tomorrow I'm on from 12 to 3. So I got to pace myself and not hit the finish line too soon.
I was going to say, Mike, you're a little under the weather. You're sleep deprived, which we were talking. I am as well. My youngest decided 3 o'clock was a good time to party last night. You got to make sure you don't pull a hammy. Like, you don't want to they say all the time that sleep is the most important part of exercise. And you and I are coming in cold here.
I'm a terrible sleeper. Just in general, I have apnea. Yep. I wear a freaking CPAP, which I hate having to do.
Sure,
but I have to do it. And I didn't do it last night because I was so tired. My head hit the pillow and I didn't put the mask on. So, look, we're off to a bad start because we're talking about my CPAP 3 minutes in. But
Or a great start.
I suck at sleeping. It's my whole life. Snore, apnea, just really brutal. So when you throw kids into the mix and they really mitigate the amount of sleep that you can get, it makes for somebody that's perpetually tired.
Yeah, and that's a fun state to be in. I've been there for about 8 years since my first child was born. So we will pivot here from sleep. If anyone wants to talk sleep, we're happy to here on the show. 844-843-6879. Phone lines will be open throughout the morning. Sean Engel behind the glass, getting us up and running here, always on the great music as well. I appreciate his work. But Super Bowl 53, obviously going to dominate pretty much any sports talk or any station you turn on over the next 48 hours, as you have the Rams and the Patriots ready to go at it. The rematch from 2002, where the Pats obviously sort of started this dynasty run. You had the Vinatieri kick, and you had, what was it? Pats were plus 14 in that one. A little bit of a different flavor here. I know the Patriots like to play the underdog card, but not nearly the underdog they were then. The greatest show on turf going down, Mike Martz and Kurt Warner, of course. But there are a lot of narratives, Mike, and they can get drowned out and they can get overspoken about. But it does seem, and I want to get your take, not necessarily on what happened in the NBA, but it feels like this has been a week where it hasn't been so over the top. It hasn't been such a drumbeat of Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, because the NBA gave us a little spice of life here. The NBA gave us some news and some big news over the past even 7 days. Do you feel like you've been saturated and inundated by Super Bowl, or is it just more that you've been talking about it so much?
I think I've been talking about the Super Bowl a ton, so I do get to the point after these 2 weeks where I'm like, all right, let's do this. Let's get the game going. I'll probably feel like that. Towards the end of the show today, I'll be thinking, I'm excited about tomorrow's show, but it'll really be like, let's get to the game kind of thing. There isn't any doubt, though, that because of the two huge, one announcement, one actual trade, one reference to becoming a free agent by Kyrie, Anthony Davis and Zinger being the other one. I'm a Knicks fan, so for me, that was a huge impact on my NBA following and exactly what kind of stories I would read. So I had to pour into that for a little bit, and I'm really bummed about it. I do think there's been plenty of Super Bowl talk, but to your point, first of all, the Patriots are back again.
Yep.
So how many times can you do that? Well, aren't Brady and Belichick awesome stories? First of all, a lot of people don't like them.
Yep.
But we know. It's unbelievable. And, yeah, I know a lot about Tom Brady because he's been around forever. It's incredible. We got it. Most people want them to lose. They have millions and millions of fans, but people want to see different stuff. It's just the way it goes. Dynasties are impressive, and I like to see the best teams make the big games, but you don't want to see the same team winning over and over again unless you're a fan of that team. That's the reality of it.
Yeah, it's a great point, not necessarily even about the NBA, but you can only tell the same story so many times and in different ways. And we've now been here, what, 9 times in the Belichick-Brady era of them being in the Super Bowl. They have won 5, looking for 6, and can be tied with the Steelers for most all time. Sorry, that's right. And then if they win the Super Bowl,
they'll tie the Steelers with 6 championships and surpass the Steelers for most postseason wins ever.
And think about that. This is a team, we talked about it last week. This is a franchise that was moribund. Like this is a franchise that was close to the laughing stock of the AFC in the mid-90s. You know, they had some, rays of sunshine across the span of a few years, but this was a franchise that had been sort of forgotten. And here we have, and I think one of the fun things to talk about, we're going to get into some narratives here in the first segment. We're going to talk plenty about what the Rams need to do to win, what the Pats need to do to win. We'll check in on football specific prop bets. We'll talk a little bit about the entertainment and commercial prop bets and the things you can watch on the periphery of the game. But I do want to touch on narratives a bit here at the top, because I think they color the entire page, right? That's what gets us to appreciate the game a little bit more than just grown men hitting each other over and over again. You have the narrative of what happens when Brady and Belichick leave, right? So I think we all try to project out, there's no effing way, I don't know other way to say it, that this continues beyond Belichick and beyond Brady. I'm a big Belichick believer, less so in Brady. I think he's one of the greatest of all time, don't get me wrong, but I think the genius lies with Belichick. Kraft has been fine. He's done what Belichick has asked him, and you leave it at that. But you have Gronk talking or at least intimating that this could be retirement. Devin McCourty, Rutgers guy, so I'm a big McCourty Twins fan. Have Devin McCourty. Player. Yeah, and he's been solid. He's a great ambassador for the sport. But he sort of said, hey, if we win, I might peace out. And then he walked that back a little bit later in the week. But these are some key pieces over the past few years, obviously, for the Pats. Not the entire dynasty, but more recently. Do you think that's at least enough narrative to make you watch a little closer how a McCourty plays, whether or not Brady does, and this isn't really the Patriot way, but whether or not we see a ton of Gronkowski in this game? Are those narratives you think at least are legitimate?
Well, first of all, it's hilarious that Brady said there's 0% chance I'm retiring.
Yes.
So
you
can kind of appreciate the fact that he's still that competitive where he's like, no way. I'm not going anywhere. Like, I'm doing this again because we get to the Super Bowl all the time. And why wouldn't I want to do that? Look, in the grand context of, and I think it will always be a debate, and some Pats fans won't even hear it, that it's Brady over Belichick. For me, it is Belichick over Brady. But I think if Brady was on a different, moderately successful franchise, would have won Super Bowls. Like if he was a Steeler instead of Ben, they would have had good enough teams that he would have been able to win. This obvious pairing with Belichick has taken it to a level that we haven't seen in the history of the league. So that I understand. Could it continue after Brady? I mean, that is an absolute crapshoot because you have no idea who's going to be playing there. But I think Josh McDaniels, if he were to continue after Bill walked away, he really is in a position where I think he understands the level of detail regarding situational football that makes the Pats so good and why they win all these games in the margins. As good as they are, they're just extremely well coached. Now, you have to understand, Bill's 67 years old, 66, going to be 67. Brady's 41. He's coming back. You have Dante Scarnecchia, who's already retired once and has made the offensive line just, I mean, he might be the best coach in the league, period. He takes any collection of offensive linemen and just makes them great. So those are the types of things that they'll be turning the page on that you have to consider long term. So, yeah, that would be certainly a difficult thing to assume that they will continue, even if McDaniels has all the tricks, all the Belichick tricks. He's going to be working with a different quarterback and different players. As far as the Gronkowski narrative is concerned, I'm trying to fight against it because it does logically make some sense.
Right.
That Gronk was a part of that Chiefs victory, and he has not run as many routes as he did in other seasons, obviously. But I could see him being a part of this. And the Gronkowski touchdown odds were, they opened at around 180. I think they're down now, but I think you can find some interesting Gronkowski overs. The problem is that those are going to be pretty chalky. I think people are buying into the narrative that Gronk is going to be a big part of it. And the Pats are pretty good at utilize. It's of all the guys that it's been hard to figure out. First of all, you've never really in fantasy, you've never really wanted a Patriots back until like the last two seasons when White was such a big part of the passing game. And then Michelle was obviously very successful, particularly at the end of this season. Gronkowski historically has been pretty difficult to figure out. He had a couple of those just game in, game out dominant seasons, but really, the last couple of years, you have monster games, then you have standard tight end games where he goes 3 for 30 and doesn't score. But I think that's game plan appropriate for the Patriots. They know that Gronk, on some level, even though he's not what he once was, is a threat to that you can use as a decoy.
Yep.
So they may say, people are going to expect us to target Gronk 12 times. We're going to dial it back, get Hogan or Dorsett in the mix, and run some unexpected plays. That's right.
Yeah, I think he just nailed it. And if you read any of the previews for this week, you know, CBS has a gigantic one. ESPN, Bill Barnwell has a deep dive. A lot of the DFS writers out there in the world and fantasy football analysts have, you know, breaking down the numbers around Super Bowl 53. I think that you have discussion around Gronkowski could be a big part of this game plan. He could be, but projecting that he will be is difficult just on his usage over the past, you know, 8-12 weeks, injury concerns. So it is much more narrative than numbers driven that Gronkowski will come out of this with, you know, the most receptions for the Pats or an over number. It is a fun debate to have and fun discussion to have. You made a point also about the Pats in general. In one of these previews, they make the point about the defense that it's hard to predict what the Pats will do on defense. That's why they're so good, is they cover in such a variety of ways and they disguise it. And they do it on offense too. So much motion, so much movement, so many different game plans that on any given day you could see a guy like Patterson or Hogan be the most targeted, because it's just Belichick understanding how to move things around and Josh McDaniels really making it work. Trying to keep an eye on other narratives that might be out there. Obviously, you have the fact that the difference in age between Brady and Goff is old enough to drive. So Brady is 41, mm-hmm. Jared Goff 24, 17 years between them. Could get a license in most states.
He was 7 years old when these two teams played in the Super Bowl. I mean, it's insane.
And so Brady is now will be the second 40-plus quarterback ever to play in the Super Bowl. Do you know who the other one is?
The 40-plus-year-old quarterback to play in the Super Bowl, Steve Grogan?
It's a trick question. It's Tom Brady last year. Tom Brady was 40 last year. See, I had to pull the fast and loose. No, I'm playing fast and loose here, Mike. It's
it's early on in the show. You threw trivia at me in the first segment.
Trivia on, well, I knew I had an in here. The sleep deprivation, like I had an easy one.
Pretty
there.
Sharp at Super Bowl trivia. So 0-1.
we'll get you back on off the schneid. Don't worry about that. Cool. Looking back at the season, Goff and the offense, we'll talk about the LA Rams. We know the narrative around Gurley coming in. We'll talk about Gurley and the offensive line for those Rams. CJ Anderson, what role he'll play. We'll talk about what we see as the path forward for the Patriots, how they're going to make this work, how they come out with a W. Lots to break down, and we're going to do our best to look at both sides of the ball for both teams and talk about some of the fun prop bets that are out there as well, because why not? That's a lot of the fun of this game, and you figure out and look back at, you know, Refrigerator Perry prop bet, where prop bets were really born. Plenty to get to here on Fantasy Sports Day. Dan Schaffer, Mike Blewett, we'll be back on the other side of this break talking Super Bowl 53 and the New England Patriots.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Dan Schaffer and Mike Blewett here. Pardon the laugh here, but Sean Engel behind the scenes does a great job of getting us in and out of the breaks and keeping things light. Don't forget, get 50% off at DailyRoto.com Elite Monthly Membership if you sign up before Super Bowl 53 kickoff. Elite packages feature access to premium fantasy content for all sports, premium lineup optimizer for FanDuel and DraftKings. That's for NFL, NBA, MLB, and golf. Access to betting tools, player props, and more. Customizable fantasy projections and rankings for FanDuel and DraftKings. Professional commentary via premium podcasts. Written fantasy content and slate breakdowns. FanDuel and DraftKings ownership projections. That's for the NFL only. DFS strategy guides, research tools, and lineup alerts. Just enter the promo code SB53 to get your 50% off DailyRoto.com Elite Monthly Membership and cash in on your prop against the spread and totals wagers on the big game. That's promo code SB53. Dan Schaffer, Mike Blewett here with you, talking all things sports, but focusing in on that football game that is set to take place tomorrow at about 6:30 Eastern time. It's Super Bowl 53. It's Rams and Patriots. Mike, let's take a look at these.
I feel bad,
New England,
by the way, that I said Steve Grogan was he was like 32 when he played in the Super Bowl.
But he played like he was 40.
Yeah, he did. The memory of that most fans have of Steve Grogan is like with the neck roll and just lumbering around and getting the crap beat out of him in the late 80s. He played for 14 seasons or something crazy like that. But, yeah, I think, 15, 16 seasons he played. So, at the end of it, it was just, you know, he was a quarterback and he was lumbering around. He did play till he was 37, but that was when the wheels really fell off the wagon in New England. After they got crushed by the Bears, it all went south.
It's funny to look back at that era, or even any era of the NFL, and how slow the game was. You know, just how like it is obviously changed because of the rules for defensive players, the athletes getting much better. And any sport, you can make the same. If you watch, you know, 80s basketball, I remember, forget what game it was, but it was maybe the Knicks Pacers game where Larry Johnson hit the 4-point play. And it was fourth quarter, right? And it was 89-88. Yeah. Just, wow, that's a whole different league.
Late 90s, mid to late 90s NBA hoops was just a slog until they finally started until they pulled back on the hand-checking rules and the game really opened up into a three-point bonanza.
Amazing. But we do want to take a look here directly on the New England Patriots, what they need to do to come out with a win, their sixth Super Bowl win in nine tries. Obviously, Mike said in the opening segment that would tie them with the Steelers for the all-time lead in the NFL for Super Bowl wins. If they do pick up the victory as well, they move ahead of the Steelers for most playoff wins in NFL history. Crazy run here for Belichick and Brady, but all dynasties were meant to die. I don't think that's actually the way the phrase works, but I'm going to use it. We need to talk Pats here, Mike, and obviously it all starts and ends with Brady in a lot of ways. This is a team that uses some motion, uses a lot of running backs out of the backfield, lots of crossing patterns to get their offense going. From your vantage point and from what you see from this game, how did the Pats attack here? What's your sort of checklist of things they need to do from an offensive standpoint to make sure they come out with the W?
So the way it breaks down, I think, and I've been over this with a bunch of people and really tried to get different perspectives, including people that are backing the Rams. And I think the difficulty for the Patriots is going to be that the manner, look, any quarterback is going to get rattled by the pressure, the manner in which the Rams get pressure, which is up the middle through with Aaron Donald and Dominic Sue pitching in as of late. And particularly Brady doesn't like it because it blows up the pocket. He's obviously not mobile, so he is going to struggle a little bit with that. You think back to the Giants Super Bowl victories over them. They really brought pressure with just the four defensive linemen not blitzing and not getting a particular amount of pressure on the outside. Michael Strahan might disagree, but the reality is the other offensive linemen pushing up the pocket and blowing up the pocket is what made it difficult. Just 2 years ago when they played Atlanta, that game is going to be remembered for its comeback, but even though Brady won the Super Bowl MVP, he wasn't having his best day. His statistics at the end of it looked great because he threw a bunch of touchdowns and over 300 yards, and statistically he looked fine, but for big portions of that game, he had thrown a pick six on the Edelman catch. The famed Edelman catch, he basically threw an interception there, which would have ended the game, and he wasn't as sharp, and it is because Grady Jarrett was having a monster game. He had three sacks, he had additional hurries, and Grady Jarrett would have been the Super Bowl MVP. Not Matt Ryan, not Julio Jones, not anybody else. Grady Jarrett was blowing up the pocket and making Brady uncomfortable. So that is the level set that they're going to have to realize. How do we neutralize Aaron Donald in some way? And they may not be able to. But the reality is, I think they're going to do a lot of counter runs with Michelle running away from Donald. That's A. And B, and the most important part, is I think it's James White and Edelman all day, particularly White, to get the ball out of Brady's hands quick, which they already like to do.
Right.
And Brady throws, they have more success throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage than any team in the league, and it's because of James White. So I think it's White and Edelman, very quick throws, which they're going to take some shots with Dorsett and Hogan and those guys, but a majority of this passing game, the vast majority, is going to be getting it out of Brady's hands because there's going to be less of a pocket, and they're just going to try and do work there. So who's ever on White is going to have the game of their life.
Yep, and White had, 17 targets, I think, two games back in the game against the Chargers. Kansas City only had six targets. Obviously, was a come-from-behind win in the end for the Patriots, or I guess from a tie game, getting it done in overtime. Wasn't as used, but the game plan, I think, vastly different against that Chiefs defense than it would be, as you laid out here, for the defensive line specifically. And there's some key pieces for the LA Rams that could be a big part of that defense, and we'll talk a little bit more specifically about them later, but you have a defensive secondary there that may be a little bit underrated. You know, Aqib Talib has finally been back and healthy, and I think that you're going to see a lot of Marcus Peters here getting some stuff done. So whether or not they drop one of them into coverage of a White, or they try to get a linebacker on White, which seems like a bad plan for the way it's worked out.
Yeah, so a couple of things. Peters has not had a good season.
Nope.
He's got a ton of talent, but he's been downright awful, according to Pro Football Focus grades. Tlaib has actually been really good. And despite the fact that he's made news in a variety of other ways, Nickell Roby-Coleman has actually graded out as the 16th best defensive back in all of football.
He just made break on the ball a little too soon. I mean,
he admitted that, look, yeah, I was beat. It's the only thing I could do, which frankly, as a defensive back, is the play you need to make. Because it's a touchdown if I don't do this. So I'm just going to take the penalty, and we'll try and come up with a stop. They got, you know, plus there's the 1 in 1,000 chance that they miss it, and that happened. So, but that aside, and the fact that he started shooting his mouth off about Brady being old, which is the one, it's all Tom Brady needed. If I had a prop bet, will Tom Brady get Nickell Roby-Coleman's face after he scores on him? I'd put my house on it. It's going to happen. Nickell Roby-Coleman's just going to feel the wrath, the competitiveness. He's going to get in his face about it. I've seen Brady do this a number of times. He's motivated to score on that guy specifically. But Roby-Coleman has, in fact, been really good. So he could be up on any number one of on any of these options. Peters has been bad. He's been bad in the playoffs. So I think the Pats are going to pick on him. So
I think the talent's there.
One guy. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. He has played, but I think the talent's there where he could be a difference maker. If he has a good game, if he is on play a little bit more zone and let him read Brady and break on the ball, I think it could be a difference maker.
Well, that's what he does.
Yep.
He does try to break on it. I just think he's going up against the wrong guy to play that kind of football. So
makes total sense.
So that's a big part of it. Like you said, White had a ton of targets, 15 for 97 against the Chargers, I think was the final tally for him catching the ball. So that's it for the Pats. Can the offensive line, which is stronger at tackle than guard, which helps the Rams, can that offensive line hold up in any way? And how much does it disrupt Brady? But, you know, we'll see. Brady got disrupted against the Falcons a couple of years ago, and they still won. I mean, a variety of mistakes made by the Falcons, but they still won, even though he was getting hit. He was getting sacked. He threw a pick six. He threw other interceptable passes.
I got kicked out of my Pat's friend's house. They thought it was me. We were watching that game. They're like, "Hey, you got to go." And I went home, and then everything started going right for the Pats. So I take the full blame of that one. Do have a caller on the line, Mike, and want to get to Drew here. Drew from North Carolina wants to talk a little Super Bowl DFS. We'll keep talking about the Patriots after this call. Drew, how you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, a few things, but I won't take your house. But I bet you $100. I bet you $100 Brady doesn't go get him Roby's face.
I absolutely think
Brady
he'll try.
Don't want none of that.
Well, I'm not saying Brady's going to win it. I'm not saying Brady would win a fight. I'm saying he's also got five offensive linemen and Gronk to back him up. But I've just seen it.
I've seen him do it too many times. Yeah. Blew it. Listen to me though. I'm saying that's who he's going to go yell at. I bet you he won't go yell at Roby.
All right.
He's going to go yell at all his buddies. He's going to say, "Yeah, we're the Patriots. Who's old now?" He's not going to go in Roby's face. He's going to go yell at Gronk and Edelman and his best pals.
All right. We'll see if he throws a little bit of shade at him. But
let's go, Blue. Let's put 100 on it. Roby or his pals.
Okay. What do you got for us for DFS?
Okay, yeah. All right. So I got to be honest with you. I'm really green at DFS.
Sure.
But I'm wondering, I'm starting to think that it's about you got to get a core and then find the diamonds in the rough, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, Drew, it's really this one. If you're green, Drew, this may not be the time to hop in, just because this is wagering. This is almost, you know, really playing parlays of five players, and that's fun, and I'm gonna do it, and I've already built lineups. But for the Super Bowl specifically for this game, the one game on both FanDuel, DraftKings, all the sites. Yes, you're right. You want to build a core, build what will be considered chalk, get players, three or four of them that you think have the highest upside, the best floor. And then you're looking for the Pattersons, the Hogans, the Higbees, you know, the guys who are off the radar for the most part, who have some potential touchdown upside. You're looking for scores. There should be plenty of scoring here. But it's not going to be, it's going to be a lot of people tying for first of all. And second of all, it's just a situation where you have so few choices to make. It makes for a tough way to climb the standings for sure.
Yeah, Drew, the one game slate is tough. It's the showdown slates are tough because you're building lineups that are going to get matched by a lot of people. So it's hard to get any kind of edge.
Right.
I'll explain what I mean.
True.
Because I don't mind playing a short NFL slate. Sometimes I'll play a 4 o'clock slate. And when it came to the championship games, I certainly played a few lineups there. And I entered a lineup where I think top prize, I'm thinking back, I think it was 75 grand. And myself, the guy that I won $37 on like a $3 bet, pretty good. Made 12X. You can't get broke making a profit. But the guy that won the 75 grand, we had the identical lineups except for two players. He had Brandon Cooks instead of Tyreek Hill, and Brandon Cooks was $2,200 cheaper. And he picked James White. He picked Sony Michel instead of James White. I thought it was going to be a big White day, not so much on Michel. So what's the irony of his lineup is that he left over $2,000 on the salary cap. So he found an edge by doing something that most people wouldn't have the stones to do, which is leave a whole bunch of salary on the table. But in these shorter slates, it's really difficult to get an edge. So
I would say the one other thing, Drew, to think about is...
I would say play it for fun, but to Dan's point earlier, the one game slate is difficult.
There it is. Play it for fun. Play it for, you know, a couple of dollars, and meaning a couple of dollars, what you can afford. It's not meaning $2 only, but just whatever within your realm of...
I'll play it.
So what's your focus here? Who are you focused in on? What players do you think are your core as of right now?
My core right now is Brady... White, Woods, and Gurley. And I'm thinking Reynolds might be but I don't know what the budgets are looking like. I'm just spitballing right now because I haven't even looked at it.
Yeah, Drew, so appreciate the call, and I think it's a conversation to have, and I'm sure it'll be had on this network over the next 24 hours. To Mike's point, this time of year, leaving cash on the table matters. Now, again, if these companies, the DFS companies, are doing their job, and I mean that not in a negative way, but if they're doing their job, the pricing should be so sharp that you need to use the entire salary. Like, that's the idea of it. Like, that's how it should work. But they're not. They want people to play. They want people to be able to play the players they want. And the edge is in ownership. And there are plenty of sites out there that do ownership. I did the Daily Roto read. They do NFL ownership projections. And the edge is also in leaving salary on the table. So you're going to have. Yes, you are.
Yeah, still here, bud.
Okay. Well, some of the stuff you guys have been talking about, I just I played DFS a long time ago when I was it was a solid 3 years ago of season long fantasy, and I made it about 9 weeks, and I overstretched and busted out, and I was like, man, screw that. But anyway, I played NBA last night, and I was just a Monte Morris for the Nuggets away instead of Jaylen Brown from, like,
yes, sir,
you know, just regular money to, like, some good money.
Yeah.
The margins are really thin.
Oh, that 15 points just makes such a difference. So many spots of difference.
Drew, we appreciate the time and appreciate you calling in. Mike, I think we have a few more thoughts on DFS on the other side of the break, and we'll get back to the pass.
Drew, keep listening, and I'll put the lineup together that you wanted to put together. I'll see how it plays out.
We will talk about that on the other side. We'll talk more about the Super Bowl and, of course, talk about some of the entertainment aspects as well, commercials and more. Back with more after this, Fantasy Sports Today.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Dan Strapper, Mike Blewett here on Fantasy Sports Today. I will be with you till 10 a.m. George Kurtz slides into my seat then as we talk Super Bowl 53. We're on till 11 a.m. this morning. Plenty of coverage throughout the day here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're talking to Drew from North Carolina before the break there, Mike, and talking DFS. And I know we're going to take a look specifically more so at what he was trying to do. But I just want to remind and drill down on the idea that the single game DFS is new. It's something that with PASPA being repealed, the DFS sites felt they could make the move towards. So there isn't as much data around how to build lineups for that as there are for the typical standard DraftKings FanDuel lineup creations. But you're dealing with typically a multiplier for one player. It's an MVP, I think, on FanDuel, and on DraftKings, it's your king or whatever it's called.
Captain.
Your captain. I make some things up sometimes, but your captain on DraftKings. So you're dealing with a multiplier one, and then you're dealing with flex positions from there. You have six spots on DK. I think it's five on FanDuel. Don't have it up right now. So it's just a different way to build comparatively to your standard or typical DFS lineup. With that said, there are ways to do it and ways to build it, and there are ways to maximize your opportunity. And I said before the break, ownership and leaving some cash on the table typically will get you a variant lineup. And that's what you're looking for in these large-scale tournaments. You're not looking at cash. You're looking to win. You're looking to come in first place. The amount they take for management fees, over time, you're just going to lose. And Drew made the point that a few years back, he played more than he should have, and he busted out. And that's why I say, have fun. One, this should be fun on Sunday. And two, play within your means. And then build that lineup as best you can. So, were you able to build a little bit here, Mike?
Yeah. To your point, like, I think a lot of the mistakes that people make with wagering is like, I had a good night, so let me just ramp it up a little bit.
Yes, sir.
Here, I think you just go in with a budget. I think you should play, especially when you're new, even if you played in the past and you took some time off, when you get back to it, just play. I personally would play like 5 to 10 lineups a weekend for the NFL. You can play different types of games, throw one in a tournament, do the rest in cash, make them lower level. Because if you're trying to learn and get better at it, do it that way. If you're trying to be a hitter and you don't care if you lose $100 a weekend or a couple of $100 a weekend or more, like you would on the tables at Vegas because you don't know what you're doing, that's fine if that's fun for you. But I'm saying if you're trying to learn, spread $30 around on a whole bunch of lineups. They have dollar games, $2, $3 games, $5 and $10 games. I live on the $5 to $10 games. I'm not a DFS pro. I know a lot about it, but I refer to the Daily Roto guys who are the real experts in making some money. And when I make money, it's usually as a result of Daily Roto's advice. So I can't recommend that enough. Between their podcasts and their write-ups and the lineup optimizer, it's really helpful. So, you know, I ran the optimizer for this showdown slate on DraftKings, and only one of them came up. And this 20 lineups, so only one of them came up with Josh Reynolds. So I think that's going to be a tough one. To build it the way he wanted to do it, I put Todd Gurley in the captain spot. I got Brady, Reynolds, Woods, James White, and then I've got I've got money. I've got $5,500 left. Now, Gronk is up at $6,000. It'd be nice to squeeze him in there, but I can't. And then you have C.J. Anderson, Rex Burkhead, Philip Dorsett, Chris Hogan, the both kickers and both defenses. If you want to drop all the way down to a Higbee or an Everett to get an edge, it's fine. You're going to leave $3,000 on the table. But as I just detailed, it doesn't particularly matter.
I know
how much salary is left.
There are some in fantasy who want to ban the kicker, but kicker's important on the showdown slate, especially in a game that's going to score a lot of points. Don't ignore the kicker here. Ignore the kickers for both. Obviously, Gostkowski.
I wish Zuerlein was healthy.
Yeah, that is a big part, but it that is something to consider too. Don't just think offensive players. Points are scored, and that's the other thing. To Mike's point, I agree completely. I always I quote unquote grew up playing DFS on the idea that your bankroll is 100% every given slate. You should play no more than 20% of that bankroll, and as it diminishes, still 20%. And in that 20%. Varies on what you want to play, but about 70 to 80% cash and then 20 to 30% in GPPs. So that's just sort of a framework for those out there who are new to DFS, looking at NBA, looking at the showdown slate. With that said, though, you really want to understand the scoring of these games. Like, you don't want to just go in thinking, oh, it's PPR, I know what I'm doing. Look at what the kickers get. Look how that scoring works. Understand it so you make better lineups. We do have another caller. That is Nathan from New Jersey. Jersey boy myself. Mike, I know you know the Garden State. Welcoming somebody from New Jersey. Nathan, how you doing today?
Hey, what's up, guys? Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I got two things. One on the Super Bowl and then one on the Porzingis trade. But
sure.
First, the Super Bowl. Here's one thing. The Rams have a chance tomorrow, but in order for them to beat the Patriots, they need to put some pressure on Tom Brady from the inside. From the inside with the Sue and the Donald. So if Donald and Sue can put the pressure from the inside, then they have a chance to beat the Patriots. And plus, if they can get the running game going. Like, I'm a Cowboys fan, so they ran all over us that game. So if they can do the same thing like they did against us, then there's another key component to beating the Patriots. But to beat the Patriots, and I think whoever wins the coin toss, I think if I were the Rams, I would defer it because you know how the Patriots are when they defer like the second half. I think it's important to get the ball in the second half, especially playing against the Patriots.
Except that the Chiefs deferred and it completely backfired.
Exactly.
And
well, that's the thing.
Mahomes didn't see the field in 20-degree weather for 45 minutes. So,
and Nathan, I want to get Mike's take on this. And Mike, you already started going there. It's also the idea of, you're the underdog as the Rams.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't want to get down early to Brady. You just don't want that feeling. So, Mike, would you defer, or do you think this is a spot if the Rams win the toss, you get the ball in the hands of Goff and see what you can do on offense?
I would try. I think there is some value in deferring. The Pats defer all the time, but I think they'll like to take the ball here and score like they did against the Chiefs. But I can't. I think their game plan will be somewhat similar to what it was against the Chiefs. They just won't be able to run with ease against the Rams like they did against the Chiefs. The Chiefs were the worst rushing defense in the entire league. They fired their defensive coordinator minutes after the game because he couldn't find a solution to that. But you're right about the pressure. The good news is that they only get pressure up the middle. They're not good. Mm-hmm. They're not a good edge rushing team at all. So that does play to their strength. And against what is their offensive line is really good in New England, but their tackles are better than their guards. So Donald can do some work there. So your point there is important. I think the Rams rushing game will have to be good. But what's more important to me, and it's why I will be picking against them, is that Gurley's going to have a monster game in the receiving portion of the game. And it's something he's great at. And getting him out in space against linebackers that he can overwhelm would be really important. I trust McVay to do it, and I trust that Goff can get it done. I just don't have any evidence that Todd Gurley is completely healthy right now and or can get this done, because where has he been? How does he disappear in an NFC championship game? It just doesn't make any sense.
And Nathan, what's that thought on Porzingis?
Yeah, so I'm a big New York Knicks fan, so I just want to, all I have to say is thank you for the Mavericks for taking on those bad contracts, Tim Hardaway and Courtney Lee. And it was, I mean, it's horrible to see Porzingis go, but I think at this point and the season is the way the season's going, I think it was the right move from the front office to get rid of Porzingis and he wants to start afresh in a new place. So give him that chance again with his good friend Luka Doncic. So I think he's going to excel in Dallas. But when it comes to the Knicks, man, we got the cash space now. Now it's all up to the front office to make the sales pitch. So hopefully we can land two free agents. My wish list is KD, Kawhi, or Kyrie with both. Either KD or Kawhi with Kyrie. That's my wish list.
Well, Nathan, that's a great wish list. Yeah. And I would say that there is absolutely zero reason for me to trust the Knicks front office.
That's
the bottom line. I understand that this is a new formulation of the Knicks front office, but there isn't any reason for me to trust
James Dolan.
You said it yourself that it's horrible to see Porzingis go. That's it. He's a somewhat known commodity. You can argue, you can argue that he's somewhat brittle because he's had an ACL, he's had other injuries. Will that continue to be an issue for him? But I would love to have Porzingis. What is wrong with having Porzingis and a high pick and one free agent? That was fine, that plan. But now it's like, all right, we have space for two maxes and a high draft pick, but maybe that's not Zion Williamson, who everybody's in love with. By the way, he's not necessarily the best pro prospect, as impressive as he is in college. So you're banking on things that they haven't been able to pull off for years. There's a constant rotation of point guards in New York that can't seem to play very well. Trey Burke, Frank Ntilikina, Emmanuel Mudiay, and now we're bringing in Dennis Smith, who, frankly, I wanted the Knicks to get a couple of years ago. But they literally had a collection of point guards. Yeah, they would literally have a collection of point guards all drafted in the top 10, none of whom can seem to play. And one of whom was a malcontent in Dallas. We'll see if he can turn it around in New York. If he reaches the heights that he did his rookie season, then I think we have an opportunity for Smith to build with one of these free agents. I'm not assuming they're going to get two. I would think they would get one. But let's just say it's Durant. Let's just, for argument's sake, Dan, it's Durant that they get.
Yep.
Where's Kevin Durant at in this point of his career? He's going to New York while he's over 30 to do what? To dominate or to have fun? I just don't know. It might be a different time in his career.
Yeah, I think it's spot on. Nathan, thanks for the call. And you're right in that, Nathan, that you're talking about Kawhi and KD and Kyrie. And that makes total sense. But I'm with Mike here. I can't trust this front office to get it done. We've been down this road before. You know, hashtag summer of LeBron. Everything was leading up to that summer. They're clearing cap space so that LeBron James would sign in New York. And we all saw what that was. You know, we saw how that turned out. And I am a Knicks fan. I would love to think that Kyrie and I'd love to think that KD or Kawhi want to come to New York. But I have this overwhelming feeling that it's going to be DeMarcus Cousins and Jimmy Butler. Like it's going to be these pieces that don't quite fit, pieces that aren't quite what the Knicks need. And I loved Porzingis. And yeah, maybe he had not the right body type per se, 7'3", wingspan, like all things that didn't quite mesh for him body-wise. And Mike, I think you nailed on something. We're dovetailing to NBA a bit more than I planned, but Zion Williamson is a man amongst boys in college. I really am intrigued to see how he plays in the NBA against people his size, people of the same skill level. Right,
he can't play like that.
Exactly right.
Everybody wants him to be, well, remember LeBron was like that? Okay. We're picking, we make these comparisons where you want him to be the greatest player. He could be just like the greatest player in the history of the NBA. Okay. I guess he could, but there's the chances of that happening are approaching zero rapidly. So I don't see an appetite for me to get on the Zion is going to be just like LeBron train. But besides the fact that LeBron was in freakish shape for a 19-year-old. He was built like a 25-year-old NBA player already when he entered the league. Zion isn't quite built like that. And additionally, LeBron's skill set is different. He can run point guard, and he's much more like Magic Johnson than Michael Jordan. And Zion isn't like that. Zion does try to dominate people physically in the paint.
Yeah, makes total sense. And while you were talking, I did also Google Knicks point guards. And it is a mess. It is a mess. And you look at, who remembers Nate
Robinson? By the way,
it's
not just the Knicks. It says, says more about the NBA that they keep missing on these point guards, and they're so quick to get rid of them. Moutier, how many discussions did we have about Moutier before the draft and how great this guy was going to be? And he's on his second team, maybe on his third. Trey Burke, he's moved around the league a few times. I like Trey Burke, actually, as a player. Neil Kina and, now Dennis Smith Jr. We'll see.
Oh, man, Langston Galloway, Jerian Grant, Brandon Jennings was there, Ron Baker, of course, Neil Kina, Ramon Sessions, all over the past 3 years. Quickly getting back to the Pats on the defensive side of the ball before we hit the top of the hour. It's obviously that they're going to scheme to stop this offense from the Rams in multiple different ways. We hear over and over again the narrative that Belichick stops one star. That's what he does. He focuses on one guy and he takes him out of the game. Does he take Gurley out? Do you think that's a legitimate work plan or game plan, I should say, for the Pats? Or do you think this is a disguise as much as they can and throw a bunch of different looks at Jared Goff?
It's obviously going to be the thing that I'm most interested in. I thought during the Chiefs game that it was going to be Kelce that they would try to eliminate because they have done that in all the previous matchups. And then at the end of the game, you're like, oh, Tyreek Hill hasn't done anything. And Kelce had scored a touchdown and caught a bunch of passes, including some key third down plays for Kelce. So I am curious to see who they're taking out. Based on last week, it leads you to believe that it'll be Cooks this week, that they don't want them to get beat on deep. And I think it is apparent, as good as Devin McCourty has been over the course of his career, the Pats can get beat in the secondary. It isn't a strength of their team. I think their linebackers are good, but not particularly athletic. And I think there have, I wouldn't say discipline issues. I think it's probably an overall athleticism issue in their defensive backfield. McCourty's good, but he's at, he's intimating retirement. So I think that says a lot about where he's at. So I think it'll be Cooks that they try to eliminate, let Gurley eat. But if it's a monster Gurley game and we're seeing 200 scrimmage yards, then that could swing the game.
We have plenty still to get to. We'll talk a tiny bit more about the Pats. We have to touch on the Rams offense and defense. We'll take a look at prop bets as well. Plenty to get to here on Fantasy Sports Today. Back with more after this on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.